Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Doug McIsaac with Online for Offline, and I appreciate you for being on the call. Today, we have Jason Ewell with American Express Open, and I'm going to let Jason introduce himself a little bit more about what he does over there at American Express Open. So let's go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself, Jason.
Sure. Thanks, Doug, and thanks for having me on the show. I work in Open, which is the small business division at American Express, the division at American Express that's dedicated to serving exclusively the needs of small businesses, and I work in the acquisition team, which means my job is to help acquire new small business card customers, and I oversee a number of the channels in acquisition, including all the online channels.
Oh, that's great. That's great. And you're, I found you because you do a lot of work consulting with offline business as well, and kind of giving them an idea of how they can utilize online marketing to grow their business. And that's what we're going to be talking about today, is what methods an offline business should be using to market themselves online. And we're going to, our first question we want to jump into is what, we kind of answered this before, but what types of businesses do you think are best suited for online marketing, for adding online marketing to their mix?
So I think all businesses are suited for online marketing, but I actually think that small businesses have a greater need for it than large businesses, because a large business might have a call center that's open 24/7. They might have a large sales force and other assets they have in place to talk to customers. When you're a small business and you go to a trade show and hand out your business card or you do an advertisement, you may not be around to personally answer the phone, or if you have a team, depending on how big the team is, they may not be around. And so by having a website that's available that allows prospects to learn about your business and become interested in your business, provides a way for them to contact you, or if they're existing customers, there might be information they need that you want. I'll just give one small example. A pediatrician in the town that I live in has a website that posts up at what temperature your child has to have before you call them, that posts up what the dosages are for different medicines, and so you don't actually have to always call the pediatrician and wait for them to call back on call. So most people wouldn't think about a doctor having a website being important, but actually it really helps them serve their customers better.
That's great. Yeah, information, and I never really thought of the small business versus big business. That's specifically the way you explained it. That makes a lot of sense, because you're right. A big business would have a call center, to have somebody sitting there waiting to answer the call, and a small business wouldn't. Isn't that the beautiful thing about online marketing? It absolutely levels the playing field for small versus large businesses.
Oh, no doubt. In fact, I think that's probably the best thing about online marketing for a small business. You know, if you think about 25 years ago and you're in a local small business, you might be in a retailer, or you might, Joe's Smoky Sauce from Memphis, Tennessee, and you could only sell it in the local stores or through word of mouth. And now there are entire companies and an entire industry that's been created through somebody like Joe's Smoky Sauce being able to advertise themselves on a search engine or using eBay. So I think that what the internet does is it gives small businesses reach and it gives them scale. The reach is it actually gives them exposure to other markets they might not get access to, and that can bring in enough business to give them scale to afford some of the fixed investments that a small business has to make to really grow. And so you can actually make those fixed investments with a little bit more confidence.
Definitely. Well, let's talk about. I'm going off script on this one for you. let's talk about different things that a business can use online marketing for. Okay, you talked about one, how a small business can expand their market, and you've talked about another, how a small business can use it for information for their customers. Are there other ways that a small business could use an online presence? We're talking an online presence as well as online marketing here. So what other ways would you recommend that someone try to use online? Their online presence.
I think those two are the most important, so let's not underestimate those two.
Right.
Probably the most important thing is it's going to help you get new customers or get them interested. And I don't care what kind of business you're in. Let's say you're a construction company. Most of us know that a lot of what happens in construction happens in person. Very few people will decide to work with a contractor through an online-only experience. Most of them want to meet the contractor. There's usually a contract signed, hence the name. You will go out and look at some of the work a contractor's done. But if you're a construction firm and you're a contractor, people go through a process of deciding who to talk to, and word-of-mouth referrals are part of that process. But there are a number of firms that will post their work online and allow people to view their work and get an idea of the kind of quality work that a contractor does. So that's an example of how you can, you know, get people interested in your business through use of the internet, and those people again can find out the information when they want to. The days and times that people spend online aren't necessarily during normal working hours. And so I think that that's an example. Another example for getting a business is a retail firm. For a retail firm, you absolutely have to have a website. It has to be good. It's going to make sales for you. And if you don't have it, you're clearly not taking advantage of your brand and your reputation. If people have to come to your store and they only can come to your store, you might be leaving business on the table. In terms of servicing, I mentioned the example of the doctor's office, which I always found to be a surprise. You know, other ways you can use it, there are ways you could offer tools that are more than just plain servicing and information, where you can help customers solve problems. But, you know, I can't think of a specific example that applies to small businesses. I can think at, you know, large companies, how you sometimes see that. The example I'll give is a large retailer will help women decide which size clothes to get. And they will have they'll use the catalog in conjunction with the internet to help people try to match sizes if you're buying sizes from another country, or just try to figure out what sizes will fit you so that when you get the shipped goods, you don't end up returning them. It's in the best interest of the business, and it's in the best interest of the individual. But I can't think of any small business examples.
Well, actually, you touched on something right there that I think is vital, and I think most of my listeners understand it, but a lot of offline businesses don't. It's, you know, it's not as expensive to get online as it used to be. I mean, the tools, that's one of the great things. The tools have gotten so inexpensive compared to where they were. I mean, putting an e-commerce site up isn't a $500,000 proposition anymore. I mean, you can get templated e-commerce sites out there for couple to several thousand dollars, and actually there's some you can get for less than that. I think that's one of the things that really has leveled the playing field, is the tools that are available out there for us today.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. You've kind of touched on this one, but you know, why do you feel small businesses should be marketing online? You've touched on a couple of ideas, but let's kind of dig down a little further.
Sure. So I believe if you're not marketing online, you're really undercapitalizing on your reputation and all the investments that you make. So if you think about today, I would assume that all the businesses that are on the phone today are marketing or selling in some way, shape, or form, whether it's through personal selling, whether it's through local newspaper advertising, whether it's through flyers, however your business markets in particular. You do not have a website, and you do not have that website listed on every single piece of material you put out about your company, including your business card, then you're really undercapitalizing on whatever marketing you're doing. You're undercapitalizing on your brand, and you're undercapitalizing on your reputation, because a lot of small business, new business is generated on the reputation of the business, or the personal reputation of the business owner, or if there's, you know, multiple people on the team of the team. So I think that, you know, having a website is critical, because it's on 24/7, and you can design it to talk to customers and deliver the message you want to deliver. The other thing is, I think if you're not online, it's kind of like not being in the Yellow Pages 20 or 30 years ago. I don't know if you're aware of these stats, Doug, but 88% of adults do research online before purchasing a product, whether they're purchasing that product offline or online, and a full 2/3 of them use a search engine to actually make that decision. It's, if you think about it, it's very logical and very human. You know, people do research. Consumer Reports was always a popular magazine for such a long time. Well, you can get a lot of information through a search engine on the internet. And so if customers are out using the internet to learn about goods and services and then buying offline, and there's plenty of statistical evidence showing that that's happening, then if you're not there, you're really missing out on opportunity.
One of the studies that I saw was that comparing it to the phone book, you mentioned the phone book, and where it used to be, everybody would look at the phone book for stuff. Nowadays, it's 70% of people look online first, and 30% of people have used a phone book in the last 6 months. I mean, it's going away. And you're right. You absolutely need to be there and have some information there. Absolutely right. Well, let's now, if a business wants to get started online, where would you recommend they start? If they're saying, geez, I need to do something, where would you recommend they start?
So I think the most important thing is to figure out what you want your site to be for your business. So one firm may say, I really need a business to acquire new customers. Another firm might say, I need a business to deal with customer issues. I'll go back to the pediatrician. This is a pediatrician that has plenty of clients. They don't need more clients. What they need to, their pain point was that there's only five of them. They're not going to grow the practice. And they don't want to grow it any bigger. They have a huge demand for their services. And in order to maintain the practice and serve clients as well as they can, they need to be able to find a way to reduce the amount of time they spend on tasks that are repetitive that customers can be self-servicing on. So they made a decision that was the purpose of their site. It might be very different if you're a retailer. And so I think the first thing you need to decide is what does your site need to be for you? I think that, you know, the second thing you need to decide is how are you going to measure success? And I think when you're selling, that's very easy. How many email addresses you get, how many follow-up inquiries you get after you've been at a trade show and you've handed out your business card. And then, you know, if you're a retailer, it's really you're following it from click on an ad, which is called a click-through, to, you know, a conversion, which is when somebody actually submits a credit card to buy a product or service. So I think that you have to decide what your goals are. And then I think the most important thing is to build a good site. That is the foundation of everything. Because the way the internet operates, your site markets itself. That when somebody goes to a search engine and types in a query about a question saying, I would like to find women's shoes in North Carolina, the search engine is going out and scraping off people's sites, all the different indicators you put on your site to say what your site's about, and then returning that information to the person who's doing the search. So you have to have a good site, and that site needs to be able to draw traffic, but also when a customer gets there, it needs to be a customer-focused and, you know, going to achieve the objective you want it to achieve.
That's great. Now, actually, that's a good segue for us. You had an example you wanted to show us of a site that you really liked. Why don't we go ahead and everybody that's online, I know most of you are listening to us online, what is the website you'd like us to go take a look at, Jason?
If everyone could go in and type in www.pumpaudio, one word, pump like a gas pump, audio.com. This is a open small business customer. It was an open small business customer for about 7 or 8 years. They have since been acquired by a large, you know, billion-dollar firm. But this site was built from the ground up, you know, with a firm who in its first year maybe had $100,000 in revenue. And what I like about this site is it's executing on all the principles of a good site. It's very clean and simple and straightforward. It is not cluttered. And it is very fast because clutter leads to things being slow. But also, you know, there are ways to build your site to make sure it's fast. The more pictures and animation you have, the slower it tends to be. My favorite part is it's entirely customer focused. This business is a business that essentially sells music to advertising agencies and television stations who you drop that music into commercials and TV shows. And before this company existed, the two sources of music were either something called stock music or you would have to go out and get music where you would commission music and somebody would write a specific song for you, or you'd actually license a famous song. The cycle time and expense of commissioning music or famous songs are huge, and it's risky because you might not come to agreement, and therefore you can't deliver fast. You can't, you know, meet your deadlines. The problem with stock music is it's stock music is terrible. It's very poor quality because any musician who has their own music, when they're asked to play stock, you know, create music for stock, will never put any of their best music into stock because they lose all the rights. So this company created a model where you can access real music from musicians, their best music, but the musicians still keep the rights to the music, but you can use it as an advertiser or a television station or a production company for a single use. It's a single use license. And so they have very different constituents. They need to procure music from either independent artists or independent labels, which are the people who have music and don't really make much money off their music. And then you need to sell music to television stations and advertisers. And what they've basically done is created a homepage where right away they're asking you who you are. And if you click on any of those buttons, you will go in and see a customized experience for that customer group. So that's what I like about this website. And I can tell you, I know this company personally. I know the people in it personally, and I've known them since they had $0 in revenue, since it was a business plan. And this is a company that didn't have money, and they didn't have bank loans, and they had to self-fund everything. And the internet was key to their success. So they could not have succeeded without a website. So that's just something to keep in mind about the expense. So, you know, that's the example. I can also, when it comes to it, Doug, talk about places you can go to try to get websites set up.
This model, which is so great about this is a business that only could be successful with the web. It would have been impossible to do without the web to do this. I love business models like this. This is great. Now this is it's an out of the box type of thinking. That's really, really great.
I will tell you though that the other part that made this company successful was their in-person sales force. So they had like a 2 or 3-person sales team. It started out as one person, the owner. Then they hired a guy. And then, you know, sort of 5 years in, they were able to hire a couple other people. So it isn't like this is an online-only business. And that's important because I think most of the businesses out there are not don't just rely on online. Unless you're purely a pure-play online retailer, all customers are doing business through multiple mediums, face-to-face, telephone, online.
You have to be where the customers want you to be.
Exactly.
And there's always going to be, you know, stores are not going away. You know, it's no matter what some of the dot bombers told us a couple of years back, but stores are not going away, and certainly not in our lifetimes.
Yes.
People are always going to want that experience of walking in the door and buying, feeling something before or trying it on, and people are always going to want to be able to call and talk to somebody, and people are always going to, and people are learning to go online. So yeah, you're right. You need to be where your customers are looking for you, and that's online or phone or store or face-to-face selling, whatever industry you're in. You have to cover all the bases.
And well, this
might be a little off topic for you, but there's so much power in moving people from one channel to another, and doing multiple touch campaigns across channels has a lot of power for people. You know, using a direct mail campaign to drive people to a website, to drive them into an autoresponder series, and then maybe follow that up with a phone call. Those types of things are really, really powerful. Let's see here. What other things? Let's see. Let's move on here. What steps do you think most businesses miss when they are planning their websites? What steps do you think they miss?
Sure. So, you know, I think that one thing is not being customer focused. And, you know, what I've experienced with all marketers, and I think that all small business owners, you know, they wear all caps, and in order to be successful, they have to be able to sell or market their business. And so what I've noticed about marketers in large companies and small business owners who are trying to sell or market their business is there's a lot of passion for their product or service. And I believe this is even more true with small business owners, because I think our experience in working with a lot of small business owners, one of the things that stands out is the degree of passion small business owners have. And that's because I think it takes a certain amount of guts and courage to start a business on your own. There's a lot of risk. There's a lot of personal risk. Most people have to finance what they're doing privately with private money. They might have to mortgage, you know, guarantee a bank loan with their house. So there's a lot of passion. And what that passion can do is create a desire to talk about your product or service with this on the web with the same passion you would do in person. And I think that there's a place for that passion, and the web is not it, because if you have too much of it coming through, there's clutter. Now, you can make the passion come through, and the example I will give with Pump Audio is if you click on any of the buttons, sorry, I had to just move over to my computer. I might have trailed off there. If you click on any of those buttons, like I'm an independent artist, and go over to on the navigation at the top where it says About Pump, and then you click on Pump People. The passion for this company comes through in Pump People, because what's here are people who are in this business, individuals with their pictures, and the topic they're talking about is relevant to the end users and their customers, their suppliers, which are other musicians, and their buyers, which are creative people that work in ad agencies and production companies, all people who really are bought in and their hearts and souls are into quality production, music, video. These are people that are artists, are professionals at, you know, creating art. And so for them, or, you know, whether you call it art or, you know, creative work. And these are all creative people. And so all this passion goes through. So I think there are places on your website for the passion, and you can make the passion still come through, but your homepage and your main sales pitch has to be really clean and crisp and really customer focused. And so that's balancing the focus on the customer and what the customer wants to know and needs to know, and what you would do, and what you, and your passion and what you want to put online. I think when you're in person, it's different. I think in person, the passion is everything. I think the way small business owners talk about their businesses, that's what always resonates. It doesn't matter who I'm talking to or which small business owner, what always strikes me is the passion and how excited people are to be running their own business. So I think that it's being customer focused, it's having too much clutter. Those are the things I would avoid. And then speed. And then the other thing I notice is that people don't include their website on everything, and they're spending the money. You might as well include your website. And when someone comes to their website, it's not easy to get in touch with someone or leave a name. So that isn't true for the majority of people, but the fact that you still see anybody making those mistakes means that there hasn't been enough education out there about the internet and the things that you can do, because people wouldn't necessarily know the answers to these questions magically, but there's information out there, and it's just about pushing that information out to people who are, you know, just venturing into the internet in a big way for the first time.
Well, let's talk about, you know, you've touched on it, but let's go ahead and let's make a list while we're on the phone. What things should a website have?
So a website, I think it's the first and foremost thing is it needs to convey whatever your message is. If you're trying to sell, what your company is about, what your product or service is, it's got to be very simple. I think the second thing, and it's maybe not in this order, the order might be reversed, is that it has to be customer focused. So you need to be, if you only have one customer type, then your homepage can have whatever your message is, very simple and clean. But if you have multiple customer types like Pump, you need to be clear who those customer types are, and then you need to know what you want to say to them. And then you need to have an easy process for them to get through your process, sales process, whatever you want to call it. And that means whether it's giving you a name, whether it's, if you're hosting an event, signing up for an event, whatever it is, if you're selling something to actually buy. So I think retailers know this very well because their homepage is about selling. But I think service businesses, it may be a little less familiar. So I think that's the most important thing. We could talk about what you do offsite because I think there's things you can do offsite also.
Let's do that. Yeah.
Okay. So
Go ahead.
I mean, do you want me to talk about search? Because I know I've mentioned it a few times, and we really haven't touched on it.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and talk about the things that you can do. Let's go ahead and talk about search.
Okay. So I'm going to ask people to go to Google. Hopefully everybody knows Google. It's www.google.com. And type in the following keywords: fitness clubs, Northern New Jersey, or Northern NJ, fitness clubs, Northern NJ. And I'm just going to do a little bit small tutorial on search, even though I believe most of the people on the phone will be familiar with this. I just want to do this so we're all working off the same baseline. So once you've done this, you'll notice when a search results are returned, hopefully you see this, you're seeing the same results I am. Because I typed this in 20 minutes ago, you might not be seeing the exact same thing I have. If you searched on these terms in the last 24 hours, you might not be seeing the same results. There's a lot of reasons why you see what you see. But in most search pages, there are two types of results. There are paid search results or sponsored links, and there are natural or organic search results, which are unsponsored. The difference between them is the paid links are the only people showing up in the paid search results are companies that go to Google and bid on the keywords that we typed in, fitness clubs, Northern New Jersey. Whether you're bidding on them individually or as a combination is determined by the bidder. So companies that are bidding will show up as sponsored links. And you'll see here there's a rating of sponsored links. The sponsored links that show up in the middle of the page at the top, highlighted in color, if you have any of those, mine happens to be highlighted in like a peach, yellow, orange color, those are the highest bidding, essentially the highest bidded results. And then on the right side, as you go down, it's lower and lower bids. Now, what puts you up that high is not just how much you bid, but how much you bid and how often people click on your bids. So if you're Coca-Cola and somebody types in soda and you bid a dollar, you might, because so many people click on Coca-Cola, you might rank higher than RC Cola when they bid $10 just because you're much more relevant and you generate more money for Google. The way Google optimizes the engine is whatever's going to generate the highest combination of payment and click multiplied together, that's how it's ranked. So that's paid search. Natural search are all the other results, which are basically on the left hand and middle of the page going down below the first few sponsored links. Now, your page might not have any sponsored links at the top, but I'm assuming everyone's seeing something close to what I'm seeing. So the reason search is very powerful is so many people do it. When they're doing search, they have some intent. They're trying to learn about something specifically, and it's highly targeted. So people are typing in very specific keywords. Today, this year for the first time, or at the end of last year, for the first time ever, Google had the number of words typed into a search increase from 3 to 4 because they're seeing more and more people type very long search strings because people's confidence in being able to find what they want by typing very specific searches is going up. And if you're a small business, that's good because people may be searching based on location. They may be searching for a very specific product or service. And so when that kind of search is done, you can compete more effectively than if it's just a generic search, if somebody just types in fitness clubs, because there's no indication of where they're looking for fitness clubs. So you have natural and paid search, and I'd be happy, Doug, to elaborate, but I don't know what other questions you want to ask, but I can sort of talk about how each of these work and, you know, how a small business might be different from a larger business in the search environment.
Let's talk about like search engine optimization for a small business versus a large business, what they would do differently.
So search engine optimization is when anybody that has a website is trying to get their website to appear as high as possible on the natural or organic search results, not paid search. And the way that happens is Google or Yahoo has, you've heard a term spider or algorithm. Essentially, it's a computer program that goes out and reads web pages and then ranks those web pages based on a number of factors. The factor that you can control the most is the words on the page, if the words on the page match what people are searching on. And then anytime you create something on a web page, behind that, whether it's a picture or an advertisement or any graphic, behind that are a series of things called tags, and you actually label what that element is or that picture is, and you can put whatever you want in there. So if you are a fitness club and you want to come up when people type in fitness clubs Northern New Jersey, you can tag that content to say fitness club Northern New Jersey. It does not show up on the web page. It's just in the program on the computer. And there are search firms that this is all that they do. And I will give people a resource they can go to learn about these firms. But there are specialized firms that do this. So search engine optimization is about deciding what searches you want to come up on, what keywords people type in that you want to come up on, and keywords are the words people type in. And search engine optimization is essentially about designing your site to show up for the keywords that you think are most valuable to you. And those that includes what words you put on the page, what tags you put on, and then how popular your site is. So if you're Coca-Cola, your site is probably very popular, and you're going to naturally rank higher than if you're RC Cola or you know some local cola company. But you can increase and improve your chances of ranking high by linking to other sites that are popular, by the way you design your page. And there are firms that will tell you how to do this. And again, if you're selling something that's very specialized, it can work to your advantage. So I'm going to give an example. We at American Express create booklets on a periodic basis that advise small businesses, that give information to small businesses on any number of topics. And the most recent one we did was on online marketing, and I'll tell you where you can find it. But in that booklet, there's an article that I wrote. There's a search, a special article on search that was written by a search expert, and there's an interview and a story about a small business called Zingerman's, which is a specialty retailer in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And Zingerman's talks about how when they were in the market marketing anchovy paste, it was a special kind of anchovy paste that they found that if they bid on anchovy paste, that they would get one result. But when they bid on this specific kind of anchovy paste from a specific part of Italy, they would come up higher in the results. And so they invested their money on that specific, very specific set of keywords because it was worth investing in that. And they designed their site to respond well to that. So, you know, what you're able to do then is control your cost, because natural search doesn't cost anything except building your site. And if you are on the right keywords and you are linking and doing other things to make yourself more relevant, you're not going to necessarily be competing against Coca-Cola if the search is specific enough. And because there's very little risk, there's very little cost for you to do this, it just sits there and works for you. So that's natural search. I'm happy to talk about paid search, Doug, but I want to make sure that we get to all the topics you want to cover.
Well, I'd say most of our group, well, we can talk about paid search just briefly, but before we get there, one of my favorite sources for search engine optimization information is SEObook.com for the people on our list. And they've got a keyword suggestion tool there, as well as other great information for search engine optimization. There's also keyword tools for doing the research up front. Freekeyword.wordtracker.com is a great tool. And also Google AdWords keyword tool is another tool to use as well to figure out what keyword.
Those tools, Doug, show what keywords get the most searches, correct? So that people are able to research what keywords might be most relevant for them.
That's right. And like then what I'll go through with a client is I will ask them about their business. I'll take some notes on their business. If it's actually a physical business, I'll go around and ask them what their best-selling products are. I'll ask them who their competitor. So you want to look at what you are selling and make a list of those things. Then you want to look at your competitors and take a list of those down, and you'll want to review their sites if they have websites and see what they're targeting. And then take those terms and go to the keyword tools that all the tools I mentioned were free. There's paid ones as well. And look to see what is getting the most searches. And it will vary versus if you are a local business that's just selling locally, obviously you're going to target differently than if you are a local business that is selling something nationally or internationally. Like Zingerman's. They had a large e-commerce presence as well as having a offline store.
Yeah,
so that's
right.
Why they want. Yeah, so for them it made a lot of sense to target an individual key phrase across the entire country. Well, let's we've got 10 minutes left here, and let's talk about measurement. We hadn't gotten to that yet. Well, I believe our list is real versed on pay-per-click. We talk about it quite a bit. So let's move on to measurement and different methods that you can track and measure your website and your results, because we talked about that a little bit.
Sure. So, you know, I think you're measuring depending on what your objective is. So obviously when you're advertising through, we didn't mention affiliate relationships, so I think I should mention that. But in addition to doing working with a search engine where there's a lot of volume, and you can measure your performance by click, and in fact, the search engines will provide you analytic tools to show how well you're performing. You can measure on your own site, and you can measure off-site through other forms of advertising. So the example I'll give is affiliate programs. Affiliate programs are also pay for performance. And generally what happens in an affiliate relationship is if you have a business and you believe there are other sites out there that where you might be able to get a referral from that site and it's very relevant to your business, then you can strike up an affiliate relationship with them. And there are companies out there that set up these affiliate relationships. Again, I'm assuming most people are familiar, but Linkshare is an example of one. And so some firms just set up joint referrals without any payment going back and forth, and you can track the click-throughs from that. And some firms actually enter into affiliate relationships. And depending on your industry, there actually might be entire websites dedicated to making referrals for your industry. It really depends on what you do. So I think that for something off-site, like a search or an affiliate, you really want to track the click-throughs coming from those ads, but you want to track that customer all the way through. And again, there are tracking tools you can put on your website, so when a customer comes from one location, you'll drop a cookie on that person's hard drive and track whether that customer converts or not. And then you could do the same, a different indicator or source code from a different source, like a search engine, and you're able to track those through your sites. So, you know, when you set up a site, one of the things to ask about is what kind of track can I put onto the site? To me, that's the best way to tracking when people get onto your site. What are they doing? Then once they're on your site, when they're on your site, if they come to your site directly, you're able to track their behavior on the site. How many things, like where do they drop off? If you look at 100 visitors, how many visitors didn't click anywhere? That's called an abandon. How many what's the most popular place people clicked? What's the second most popular? That kind of analysis will show you whether your site's working or not. I can tell you that every day when I'm thinking about designing our site, I'm looking at information like that. And then there's even more sophisticated stuff than that, but that requires really hiring of outside experts, those experts will really analyze to a much deeper level what's going on your website. But most everyone should be able to have basic tracking and know if people are abandoning or what they're clicking on, because it tells you what's relevant to customers and what's not.
What's your feeling on blogs and using blogs for local businesses, small businesses?
So I think blogs are starting. I think in general, in the population, and certainly the younger the less distinguishing there is between a blog and let's say a traditional media property. Outside of sort of your lead local paper, whether it's the Cleveland Plain Dealer or the Louisville Courier Journal or the New York Times or LA Times or whatever it is. And there's other, local papers. Outside of those sort of papers and properties or the national magazines or the industry magazines, there's a whole bunch of content out there that's written by individuals that are experts in their area. And it's really targeted and it attracts really a lot of interest in that area. If you have an iPod, and I'll give an example. I never owned one and I got one and I was worried about losing my music. I just went and typed a search, and there were blogs everywhere about how to transfer music without losing it. And in small business, there might be topics like finance that a lot of people blog on, or there might be topics like marketing. Those exist, and there are experts who write on these tools. And really, the distinguishing between, I guess, a blog and a traditional journalist, I'm not sure. I don't even think I understand what it is. I think a journalist would be able to tell you that, and I think maybe a blogger would be able to tell you that. But as a common customer, I'm not sure I know. So to me, they're sources of media, and they're opportunities to talk to customers. What's great about blogs is they're a conversation back and forth. And so you can, whether you want to establish a relationship with the blog, try to have links from blogger sites over to your sites because you think they're relevant, whether you have to pay for those links or pay for performance, they're a property that has people on them, and if those people you think are relevant to your business, you can use them. And the best way to find them is to go out and do a search and search on the kind of things you want customers who search for certain things, like home additions in Northern California, then you type that in and you see what kind of content there is in that area and find out who ranks high, because whoever ranks high is going to have the largest traffic, and then you can sort of reach out to those bloggers and see what you can work out. So, you know, we do this through a network. We work through a network that has national bloggers, something called Federated Media Network. So there are networks that do this, but that's because we're going big and we're going national. For a small business in a specific area, there could be other sort of scrappy ways to get at the information.
Right, or even just hosting your own blog yourself is a great way to communicate with your customers.
So, okay, I should have mentioned that. I think, yes, the other thing is if you're good at this sort of thing, hosting a blog can be very powerful for you. And, in fact, I think some people are bloggers who had a different interest and then became full-time bloggers, and that's their profession, and they're making, you know, a significant amount of money doing that. I think that has happened to a number of people that I'm familiar with who, you know, turned blogging into their full-time business almost accidentally.
Right. We had a gentleman on a call a couple weeks ago, Jim Kukrell, who is a professional blogger. I mean, that's what he does, and he has also his clients as well, but that's what he started, is just as a guy running a blog and then started making money off of his blog.
Yeah.
Now, we've just got a couple minutes left here, 3 minutes left, and I had kind of primed you a little bit for what three action steps should our listeners do as soon as they get off the phone today. What three action steps should they take?
So I think the most important thing, I've said this many times, and I said it in the online, in the article in the open book, is that your site is your most important thing. You have to decide what you want your site to be, what purpose it's serving, and then make sure that it's a great site. I think having a great site is the most powerful thing. And to me, great is fast, it's clean, there's no clutter, it's customer-focused, and it helps customers. It walks customers down the path of whatever action you want them to take. If you want them to get information so they don't call you after hours to find out what dosage to give your baby, then it does that. If you want them to give you information, it does that. If you want them to register for an event you're hosting, it does that. Whatever it is, that if you're a caterer and allows somebody to look at menu choices, it does that. It does work for you, and that work either lowers your operating cost or increases your revenue. Number two is that you should include your site in everything you do. So I am making an assumption that everybody that's in small business either sells or markets themselves in some way, shape, or form. Even if all they do is meet people in person and hand out a business card. Well, your business card should have your site, and when you have a trade show, it should have your site. If you are advertising online, it should have your site. All of those things should be part of how you market, and in absolutely everything. And it's funny because I'm not sure even at large companies, every piece of material has the large company's website on it, and it really should. And then you think about where people are coming from and how you want to design your site. I mean, some companies, small companies, are very sophisticated, and they'll give out sites. If their site is joesgarage.com, they might have different pages people come to depending on whether they handed out their business card or they handed out something in a trade show, or they had an advertisement on a search engine, and they create different, or what are called landing pages, which are the pages that you would go to when you type in the website. And they do that by saying joesgarage.com/get-started, right, or whatever it is. They just add something to the URL, and that essentially is makes them able to be more sophisticated. So I think including your site on everything is two. So one is your site itself. Two is including your web address on everything you do. And then three is venturing into what I would call off-site marketing, starting with pay-per-performance first. So the easiest things are free things, natural search engine optimization, although there's some fixed investment there on your site, so some people may shy away from that because they don't want to make the fixed upfront investment, or links. Finding like-minded businesses, people you have relationships with, you put a link from their business, from their site to your business and your site to their business. The more you link to people, the better you perform also in search engine results. And so you do that. Or links with bloggers who you think are highly relevant. Then I would get into the next tier, which is pay-per-performance, search and affiliate. You only pay when you get a result. And again, it's about finding the right places where you think your customers or prospects will be. And then the last is is, you know, higher risk. And what I just talked about there in terms of offsite marketing was about selling your business. If you're focused more on servicing, then I think the third tier to focus on, besides having your site and including it everywhere, is that there's certain functionality you want your site to perform, certain tools you want to have. You need to invest in those beyond it just being a source of information. So if you want customers to be able to look at menus and, you know, drag and drop different menu choices for a caterer on a web page and see how much that would cost. That's an example of a tool. That's a little more sophisticated than just a static list with prices. So those are to me, examples of the three things. The site itself, including the site everywhere, and then if you're marketing, you know, moving from less risky to more risky in terms of investment. And if you're servicing, it's investing in some tools that are going to make your site a little more robust.
Well, I really appreciate that. And Jason, and I almost called you Scott there. Don't know
Doug,
why.
Doug, before we open this up, can I just mention the two places I promised people I would give them to go to learn more?
Well, I will email, add it to the site, to the download page, because we just went past our time. But go ahead and tell me the pages.
It's openforum.com, openforum.com. /online marketing, all one word. That's where people can read the open book on online marketing. And /search firm is where they can go to learn about companies that specialize in search engine optimization.
Great. That would be great. Yeah, I mentioned the forum and in all of my marketing for this. And I'll send a message out to my list, and then I'll have the web addresses, and I'll go through all my notes here, and I'll have these addresses on the download page as well for people.
Are we offline?
Going down the, we are offline. Yeah, we're offline now. We can still talk.
I thought you were going to do Q&A.
What happened to the Q&A?
We didn't get to it. We're good. we had a. I didn't have any questions that I didn't feel we weren't covering, so we were on track. So.
Okay. Do they send in questions sometimes? Because Jason could answer questions, you know, while they view the podcast too, like later on. If you want him to respond to some of the questions you've gotten and post them, we can have Jason do that too.
Sure. Okay. I can email you some questions.
Okay.
That's great. Well, no, this is great. We got a lot of good information. I mean, I liked how you kept hitting on the same points, and you know, you reflect a lot of the we're in agreement on a lot of things, you know, and I like how you kept going back to, you know, you need to have a clear message, you know, you need to make sure that you let everybody know you have a website. I really like that you kept going back to those same points. That's very important.
Well, listen, I want to thank you for the opportunity. Really appreciate it. I was very happy. I think it was a good dynamic, and I love the fact that you were making comments also, because you also are an expert in the space. So I just felt like it was a good conversation. I was wondering, I thought we had two more minutes till Q&A. So, you know, I'm very happy to answer Q&A. I would love to have had a chance to take Q&A and would be more than willing to do so. And I hope that people aren't disappointed that they did not get a chance to ask questions.
I think, well, I'll just make sure that everybody knows that they can email additional questions into us. We'll be good. I don't think anyone. Go ahead.
The live audience is usually a lot smaller than the views afterwards, correct?
That's correct. We have hundreds of downloads, and we have, you know, 30, 40, you know, I think the most I've had is 50 people on a call listening, and we get hundreds, and I think we've hit 1,000 downloads on it. On other ones. So, yeah, we don't get a lot of people live on the call. We get a lot more people downloading them.
So can you email me the link, because I'm downloading it.
Okay. Yeah, I will do that.
Sounds like it. Okay.
Thank you. Mike or myself, Doug, I'll follow up with you. Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you very much. Well, what's your email address? I've got Mike's email address, but I don't have.
To Mike to make it easier. I mean,
yeah, it makes it easier.
Just to make it easier for you.
That'd be great. I'll send you the link.
Thank you,
Doug.
All right, thank you.
Tim, tell George we missed him. What happened to George?
I have no idea, and I'm certainly going to chastise him as soon as I get on. I'm glad that I didn't need him to run the call today. So.
Thanks, Doug.
Thanks, Doug.
Bye.
Right, take care. Bye-bye.